Welcome to Them Before Us on American Family Radio, where we strive to put children before adults. Our goal is to educate the public on a child-centric perspective of marriage and family and represent the rights of children on policy matters. Now, here's the host and founder of Them Before Us, Katie Faust.
Welcome to Them Before Us Radio. I'm your host, Katie Faust, founder and president of Them Before Us, a global nonprofit that is working to defend children's fundamental rights, specifically their right to life and their right to be known and loved by their mother and father. We have had the honor of hosting this radio show since August, and we have talked about a variety of different ways that children are being victimized today in culture, in law, in technology, and even in the corporate space. And it is our job as Christians, as adults, to defend them. So we kick off Them Before Us Radio with a little bit of Bible time, sometimes just a snippet. But today I actually want to take a deep dive into this passage of Exodus 23, which when I read earlier this week, I thought, this is it. This captures the mission of Them Before Us so perfectly. So I'm going to spend a little time kind of really investigating what this Old Testament physical reality looks like in today's spiritual reality. So here's some excerpts from Exodus 23, verses 20 to 32. It says, "Behold, I sent," this is the Israelites are looking ahead to the conquest of the land of Canaan. In the previous chapters, God had spelled out so many of his laws, especially around social justice, justice for the most vulnerable, a lot of safeguards, especially around sex and around how we treat the most vulnerable. And so now he's saying, prepare to go in the land, and I'm going to tell you what you're going to have to do when you get there. So he says, "Behold, I send an angel before you to guard you on the way and to bring you to the place that I've prepared. And that angel is the angel of the Lord. If you carefully obey his voice and do all that I say, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries." If you obey God, he is going to fight on your behalf. That's what that's saying. "You shall not bow down to their gods." Okay, because there's other gods that they're going to have to drive out. "But you shall utterly overthrow them and break their pillars in pieces. Little by little, I will drive them out before you until you've increased and possessed the land." So I thought, man, this is like the story of Them Before Us. This is the story of our nonprofit, you know, that where it says, if you carefully obey his voice and do all that I say. I started this nonprofit in 2018, but before that I had started as an anonymous blogger, someone that just felt like I needed to say something. Children are being victimized, especially in these conversations that we're having about marriage and family. Nobody's thinking about the child. Nobody's putting them first. And we're destroying their lives in so many ways when we get these marriage and family questions wrong. Children are very often harmed for life through things like casual divorce. They struggle when they grow up with a single mother and their father has bailed on the family. They have to lose their mother or father to be in one of these modern family arrangements that is so trumpeted by modern media and, you know, major institutions around our country. And they are definitely harmed when they are created in these laboratories where they lose their mother or father or their life as a result. So I started as an anonymous blogger, and I tell people, you know, I didn't have a plan. My plan was wake up and do what God tells me that day. That was my plan. And so I would say, "What do you want, Lord?" And then I would open my inbox and I would see an invitation for a podcast or a request to lead a workshop at the United Nations or an invitation to speak in Australia or in South Korea. And I would just go do that thing, whatever God put in front of me. And it was a situation of I didn't necessarily need to know the plan. I just needed to carefully obey his voice. And this is not a "Oh, wow, Katie's so great" story. It's actually a "God is so great" story, because I could never have planned. Like, you want to talk above and beyond what you could ask or imagine? I could never have imagined that I would be in the place where Them Before Us has a seat at the table on the advisory board of Jordan Peterson's new project, the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, which I refer to as the righteous inverse of the World Economic Forum. I could not have imagined that we would be a leading voice critiquing not just the laws, but the technologies that are overhauling the nature of what it means to be a human child. It was the Lord who did that. And he just gave me crumb by crumb of what to do next. And it has now, especially in the last year, really exploded into a potent and powerful tool to enact that social justice that God described in the chapters prior to Exodus 23. So then I will be an enemy to your enemies, an adversary to your adversary. That is really the only explanation I have for the fact that Them Before Us has more opportunity and influence than we deserve. We are a staff of five. We do the work of 20. We outproduce so many of these, so many other major, nonprofits that have quadruple the budgets that we have. But it's only because I feel like the Lord has gone before us. And what has He charged us to do? He has charged us with the exact same command with which He charged those that were going to conquer the promised land and bring to it this brand new standard of justice. So He tells the Israelites that they need to break down Canaan's sacred pillars. Let me just outline the three sacred pillars, the three areas that they were most directed to target when they moved into the promised land. Number one, destroy Molech. There was a god, and he required child sacrifice. They would give their infants to Molech. They would put him in a burning furnace in his stomach and kill them. Why? So the rains would come on their crops, so that they would have some kind of economic advantage. Molech was the god of child sacrifice to advance adult desires. And that is what we see in our world today. That is actually one of the main areas that Them Before Us works in, is to destroy the modern day Molech. Now, I think most of you guys immediately make the connection to abortion, and you're exactly right. Abortion is, for the last 50 years, been really a state-approved method of child sacrifice, where we sacrifice these children that are unwanted or unplanned or have some kind of diagnosis that, you know, might genuinely be challenging or maybe just mildly inconvenient. And we say, this is getting in the way of my financial goals. This is getting in the way of my career aspirations. This is inconvenient for me right now. And so we allow children to be sacrificed to the god of Molech. But there's another area where Molech is being worshipped that a lot of people are not aware of. And that is the area of big fertility, of reproductive technologies that, if you've listened to this podcast, you know, destroys more embryonic life every year than the abortion industry does. And that today, if we are serious about tearing down the sacred pillar of Molech, of a child sacrifice, we have to confront both the baby-taking industry of abortion and the baby-making industry of big fertility, of IVF, of lab-made children using third parties, somebody else's sperm, somebody else's egg, somebody else's womb. But that, defenders of children, when it comes to tearing down the sacred pillar of Molech, we have to do both. What are the other sacred pillars, excuse me, that God tells the Israelites to destroy? And it is these centers for idol worship. What is going on in that center of idol worship? Very often, it is sexual rights, not R-I-G-H-T-S, like we are so familiar with listening to today, but is R-I-T-E-S, sexual rights. These religious practices, these religious patterns of worshiping idols that involved sexual immorality, whether that was temple prostitution that involved both males and females, whether it was, you know, pause this if you've got kids nearby, but like orgies that took place in the name of worshiping their idols. Unfortunately, all manner of sexual degradation was taking place in the name of sexual rites. And obviously, that was abhorrent to God, but also it created child victims. When you have sexual rites that are a part of idol worship, children are born through those sexual acts. What do you think happens to them? They're destroyed, they're discarded. or at best, they're going to grow up motherless or fatherless and then hyper vulnerable to victimization, because that's what happens when kids grow up without their mom or dad. What do we need to do today? We need to destroy the sexual pillar of sexual R-I-G-H-T-S. Our destruction of sexual rights has to do with this idea that adult sexual desire, adult sexual identity, adult sexual longings comes before the rights of children. We have swung so wildly, not just in our culture, but in our laws, to elevating adult sexual identity to the status of God. And what's happening? Children are being victimized. Children are losing their mother or fathers because adult sexual desire, adult sexual rights are being elevated to the status of God. So at Them Before Us, we work to tear down that sacred pillar by insisting that all adults, single, married, gay, straight, fertile, and infertile, conform to the rights of children, which means we don't care how you sexually identify. It does not matter what kind of attractions you experience. When it comes to kids, you conform to their needs, their rights, to their longings, rather than insisting that they conform to you. Because if we expect kids to sacrifice for us because of our sexual desires or identity, that's an injustice. And our God, the God who is charging the Israelites, and the God who speaks to the church today, insists on justice. And that means the strong sacrifice for the weak, adult sacrifice for kids, and not the other way around. So what is the other main sacred pillar that they needed to tear down? It was the Asherah poles. It was the fertility cults. It was the fertility, R-I-T-E-S, the rituals, the fertility rites that they would go through to reward them with more children or the children that they wanted at the time that they wanted. Sounds a lot like the fertility clinics of today, the reproductive industry, what we often call big fertility, that commodifies children and often destroys children so that adults can have what they want. And at Them Before Us, we spent a lot of time critiquing the so-called fertility, R-I-G-H-T-S, the fertility rights. I have a right to a child, even if it means I have to destroy 15 embryos to get the one embryo that I really want. I have a right to parenthood, even if I'm a single adult or in a same-sex relationship. You know, Them Before Us fights against the laws that are redefining infertility so that governments and insurance companies subsidize the production of motherless and fatherless children in the name of infertility care. Now, these fertility rights are dangerous for kids. We obviously want people to have lots of babies. We just don't want babies to pay the price for adults who are creating those children. And so Them Before Us is, there's so many incredible organizations that we work with, that we partner with, that are also trying to advance the ideals of marriage and family. But Them Before Us really is the only organization that I would say is targeted like a laser beam at destroying and tearing down these three sacred pillars, both the God of child sacrifice and the sexual rights that lead to the destruction of children and the motherless and fatherlessness of children, and the fertility cult that elevates the custom ordering of children and the designing of children, the commodifying of children, and often the destruction of children in the name of fertility. And we, church, are charged with child protection. Unfortunately, there was a time where we lived in a nation that much more reflected the ideals of God's law of child protection. But we are seeing a repaganization of our nation, and children are the victims of those pagan ideologies, those sacred pillars. So I would ask you to join us at Them Before Us, to come along with us in the mission of child protection, to tear down the sacred pillars that today are destroying the lives of so many children. Come to thembeforeus.com, subscribe to our newsletter, donate financially so that we can take these principles of child protection into the new year with vigor and vengeance.
Welcome back to Them Before Us on American Family Radio.
Well, culturally, there's a lot taking place, as we talked about in the previous segment, in terms of ways that children are being victimized and our responsibility to protect them. It must be us. It must be adults, and the very adults who are the most likely to stand up and courageously charge ahead on their behalf is those who are compelled by the God of Scripture, by the one who says, "Don't you touch these kids or you're going to have to deal with me." So we always like to turn our attention to what's happening in the news, because there's all kinds of ways that children are being victimized in government policy, in judicial decisions, and ways that our culture and things in the media are going to either reinforce or degrade who children are and what they need. So we're going to talk about a couple news items here. And of course, as always, I've got my executive director, Josh Wood, here to help. Josh, great to have you back. And I actually got to see Josh in person along with the rest of our staff at the banquet, which was a delight because, you know, we work on different coasts and every now and then we get to hang out together in person. So Josh, love to see you again virtually.
Yeah, great to be here, and busy news week as well.
Yeah, we're going to kick things off talking about a federal judge that is pausing some cases against pro-lifers that have been brought against advocates who wanted to pray outside of abortion clinics and who have been charged with violating the FACE Act. That is the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances, and as a result, criminally charged. And there have been several high-profile cases already this year where people have been put in prison for violating this act. So, Josh, what exactly did the judge say, and why did he say it?
So, this is a guy named Judge Matthew Lightman, and an Obama appointee. And I don't know that that really matters in this, you know, in this instance, but he essentially said that there's a specific case that they're going to push until after the inauguration to see if the Trump administration basically wants to do something different. Well, what that tells me off the bat is a lot of the determination on whether to prosecute or push forward something with the FACE Act, which I want to explain in a second, has to do with kind of prosecutorial discretion. What kinds of things are we taking up? And I think that's probably my first red flag here. Is in a perfect justice system, should it really matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in office as to whether something gets pushed forward? Isn't justice supposed to be blind? So again, and I don't think either party is immune from this type of, you know, maybe discretion, a political discretion. But the FACE Act, on the surface, is outlawing violent, threatening, damaging, and obstructive conduct intended to injure, intimidate, or interfere with the right to seek, obtain, or provide reproductive health services. So again, reproductive health services should be something that covers both pregnancy clinics seeking to give mothers the actual care they need to save babies, to provide for women and you who are pregnant who need actual care, but also the act is designed to protect a woman's right to have an abortion. Again, they put it all under one big umbrella of reproductive health when, you know, I would not call an abortion reproductive health. Anyway, the act, though, over time, Katie, has been written essentially, supposed to be neutral, but 97% of these cases are against pro-lifers. And that kind of tells you something. Okay, is it that pro-lifers are the only ones obstructing and intimidating people? I can remember even in my previous role after Roe v. Wade, there were several pregnancy clinics vandalized that we supported as an organization. And I don't remember cases, maybe they were, but I don't remember cases being brought against those the vandals either. So it tells me this is probably something that's been, the majority has been aimed towards criminalizing pro-lifers trying to demonstrate.
Yeah. We know several of those clinics in our area that were targeted, vandalized as well. I think the total was 84. 84 clinics, pro-life clinics that we're working to. And you know, it's interesting, the FACE Act, like it says, is supposed to include all kinds of organizations that are helping women with reproductive access. And so this totally applies to those pregnancy resource centers. And yet, you're exactly right. There was no prosecution of the people who targeted and vandalized the pro-life centers. So it certainly does look like there was some political calculation happening here. The FACE Act was put into law in 1994, and the Biden administration is responsible for 25% in the last 4 years, 25% of the prosecutions under the FACE Act, and they are obviously disproportionately targeting pro-life activists. Now, let's be very clear. These pro-lifers are not being targeted because they have been violent. It is because very often they have stood outside and silently prayed. So I agree that the fact that, we love to think, and ideally, especially in God's kingdom, justice is blind. And God hates partiality. He hates it when you favor the rich in your judicial decision. He hates it when you favor the poor. You are supposed to come before the judge and have your case heard on its merits. And it's very clear that justice is not only not blind here, it's not even just peeking out from under its blindfold. It is like an eye of Sauron that seems to be going after the pro-life activist. And it's just one more example of what we talked about in the last segment, that we need to, as believers, tear down these sacred pillars. We need to destroy the gods of child sacrifice. The child sacrifice that goes on both in abortion and reproductive technologies. That is our job. And it is going to come with a cost. Even if you're just silently praying, you might be targeted. Thankfully, it looks like there is going to be a little more blind justice when the Trump administration comes in, especially related to these issues. But even if there isn't, it is worth the price. It is worth the price to be demonized, arrested, to have your clinic vandalized if it means you're protecting the most vulnerable.
Well, man, it shows me republics, which is what we have in here in the United States, they require morality. They require people to make good decisions. And we have to be careful. And I think as we increasingly become more polarized, we have to craft every law. I can imagine in 1994, the majority of people thinking this is going to be such a great law to protect pregnancy centers. I think, man, as Christians, we got to be really careful. Any power we choose to wield in government for us in the majority is going to be eventually given to someone who does not have our best interests in mind. And so I think we got to craft this policy. Maybe it's time to relook at it and say, this is really honestly just going to be weaponized against Christians. And so is this really something we need? Or, hey, even better idea, we get a more moral republic. We develop some character so that the people in positions of authority here will make good decisions that are impartial, you know, so that we don't have a situation like this, which is what I don't want, is, oh, well, it's a blue White House, and so now, you know, we're in for it as a pregnancy center. Oh, well, now our guys in the office, you know, we're good and we can go after Planned Parenthood. That for me, man, that is unstable. And the law is supposed to provide stability and equal treatment. And it feels like we're just swinging like a pendulum right now in our country.
Yeah, that's great. You know, Chuck Colson used to say, it's the conscience or the constable. You will be ruled by something. What is it going to be? Is it going to be your internal sense of morality that checks your behavior? Or is it going to be a massive administrative state that has to check your behavior? So we have to develop the conscience by instilling these moral values, which will come from the Judeo-Christian perspective. It will always find its root in God's good law that was first explained in the Old Testament, first explained in Exodus. And then it is going to flow from that. And then obviously we do want justices who are going to be able to adjudicate the laws that we do have with fairness. And we're unfortunately drifting from that. So it is our job as parents, it is our job as members of our community to cultivate that kind of conscience, and then also keep the constable in check when he steps out of line. Josh, before we wrap up this segment, I want to turn our attention to sort of a cultural happening. And it is that there have been two incredible ads that have gone viral over the last couple weeks. One of them was this Volvo ad of a guy who realizes that his wife is pregnant, and he sort of does this fast forward of what her life is going to look like. And he's thinking about all these different milestones in his what he thinks will be his daughter's life. And he's on the phone with his mother saying, my wife is pregnant. I'm so excited. I'm worried about being a father. And she talks him through it and says, no, this is going to be incredible. And it kind of freeze frames at different moments of the child's life. And all throughout this time, you see a woman starting her Volvo and driving down the streets and everything. And then it ends with her braking and not hitting the woman who is now pregnant. But the Volvo was not the focus. The focus was this guy's delight and longing and beautiful future tripping on what his life was now going to look like because he's a dad. But then this other, and I like seven people sent me this. I had it like within the first, day that it was out. But then there was this other one that just came out in the last week by Apple, and it was for their AirPod Pro 2, which has this hearing feature in it. And it is, that also went viral and everybody sent it to me. And so Josh, you want to tell us a little bit about that ad and why you think it resonated with so many people?
Well, the ad opens, you've probably seen it. If not, you can, pause our program, go look at it. It's a dad listening. He's kind of given his daughter a gift. It's a guitar. And again, I think, maybe we could take some issue with the fact that dad seems kind of distant from the daughter, whether that's feeling distant because of his hearing, which we find out he's got hearing loss, or he's distant as a dad in general. But the daughter starts to play, and he starts to listen. He grabs his AirPod, and puts them in, and, it basically gives him the ability to hear. And so it's demonstrating a feature of the AirPods, which are like hearing aids, which is really cool, awesome technology. But it really gets people. He's watching his daughter play. He's connecting with her. It means so much. And it's like it's given him back this connection to his daughter. I think it stood out because Apple's an incredibly woke company. And they played a really traditional, family scene.
Yep. Apple is a chief offender, I would say, when it comes to using corporate power to overhaul the social fabric. They have a perfect 100 on the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index, which means that they are on board with gender transitions for adults and very likely minors, which might be explicitly spelled out in future versions of the Corporate Equality Index. They have employee benefits that incentivize family structures where kids lose their mother or father through same-sex partner benefits. They have fertility benefits, including egg freezing and up to $20,000 to cover IVF costs. And so internally, they're, I would say, anti-family in the sense of the child's family. But they were rewarded by a lot of eyes and a lot of shares on this ad that depicted something that completely rejects everything that they are bought into when it comes to the Corporate Equality Index. And I guess I'd like to suggest that the reason why the Volvo ad and the reason why the Apple ad were so wildly successful is because it taps into something fundamental, something that is unalterable in the nature of the human. And that is the deep connectedness that parents have to their own children, the importance of that tiny family unit that has been so under assault and so under attack, I would say, by companies like Apple in the past. And yet, this is something that everybody resonates with. It does not matter what Supreme Court justices decide in terms of what a family can be. It does not matter how much we tinker with children at the moment of conception with these reproductive technologies. It does not matter how often we repeat, love makes a family. When you get right down to it, what is it that resonates right at the core of both parents and children? It is that deep understanding that the two people who created the child are irreplaceable in the child's life. And that if you have a baby, that baby distinctly belongs to you in ways that other children throughout the world do not. These are fundamental human truths. And these companies that choose to actually create, really what they're doing is they're creating great art that reflects the good, true, and beautiful. And their market share is probably going to be rewarded for it.
Well, I think that's the marketing is a lot about storytelling. So they're rewarding those ads, those stories that universally connect. And genealogy is the ability to create life and to see yourself in your child and to see that child create life and you to become. That is so primal, ancient, lives within us, speaks to something deep within us, that it's going to resonate. It's going to connect. It also, in this world of, you know, Volvo and Apple are both consumer, you know, they produce products, but they're also kind of hinting at something deeper, that these products are really just additions, supplements to the more important things, something bigger than, you know, it's not, look at this product, this is everything, it's going to make you happy. It's insofar as this product facilitates these relationships, you're going to find, you know, true meaning and purpose through them. We're just here to help.
Yeah. Josh, that's exactly right. And we will see you in the next segment. But use media, use the good, true, and beautiful to advance these ideas of child protection.
If you'd like to comment on the show, email comments@thembeforeus.com. Once again, here's Katie Faust.
Welcome back to the final segment of Them Before Us Radio. I'm your host, Katie Faust. I'm so glad that you have chosen to give us a portion of your weekend and that the next week for you looks great. Do you know what I'm doing next week? I am going to watch my oldest daughter get married. And it's pretty amazing to watch the cycle of family start anew and to be so excited about this next chapter of her life and then all of the different transitions that it includes. So I am going to be officially taking some time off so I can pour myself into kicking off this beautiful new chapter in her life. You know, we talked at the top of the radio program about how what is going on in our culture today really mirrors the kinds of injustices that the nation of Israel was called to abolish when they moved into the promised land. And we do need to critique all of these ways that children are harmed. But we also need to celebrate. We also need to model and advocate the good, true, and beautiful in all of these different areas, even if that means shouldering hardship in our personal life so that we can reveal to the world what it looks like to enact justice within matters of marriage and family on a personal level. So what we're going to do, what we always do in this last segment, is answer your questions about kind of rubber meets the road issues of how do we protect kids, but also what's going on in my own life. And for that, we have, as always, Jen Friesen, our Them Before Us training director. And she's going to pitch some of the questions that you have submitted across the course of the last 7 days. Jen, welcome back.
Hey, Katie. Hey, everybody. Glad to be back with you. First question, really interesting. From the Them Before Us perspective, or as an organization, are we advocating for an outright ban on sperm donation, egg donation, and surrogacy?
Yep. Bye. Gone. Zero of this should ever happen in a society that prioritizes justice for children. It is always the creation of, in essence, biological orphans on some level. And it is not doing that because a child has suffered a tragedy. It happens because adult intention, adult desire, adult identity, adult feelings are being elevated above the rights of the child. Children who are created through sperm and egg donation very often struggle with identity issues. They don't have complete medical records. Very often they have dozens or hundreds of half-siblings, and so they worry that they may accidentally date or marry a half-sibling or a first cousin. They feel commodified because money changed hands at the moment of their conception. Children who are created through surrogacy very often experience higher rates of anxiety, struggles to bond and attach, because that first initial relationship with the only person they knew on the day they were born were severed. Adoptees have wrestled with this very often through their life in what they deem a primal wound. But now we are inflicting that primal wound intentionally on children of surrogacy. And very often those children will also lose their genetic mother, maybe their genetic father. Maybe they'll go home to a house that doesn't have a mother at all. Any form of third parties being involved in the reproduction process, somebody else's sperm, somebody else's egg, somebody else's womb, is always asking children to do hard things on behalf of adults, and it should be completely illegal. Jen, I know you've spent a lot of time on our Them Before Us podcast talking about this and really fielding a lot of questions from our followers on some of the nitty-gritty of their own reproductive technology journey. What would you say about this?
I agree. We want the ideal world. We have to advocate for the ideal world. That's a lot of what we do, right? But we're also for incrementally, coming after some of these practices. We were chatting as a staff about, you know, what are the ways we could try to go after surrogacy piece by piece by piece. So I know there's some folks within the pro-life movement, there's kind of the it's all or nothing, or there's we can do it in increments. And I'd say generally we're for anything that starts protecting children as soon as possible. Like, let's say ban all commercial surrogacy to start, then you've handled 98% of it. So we are very thoughtful and want to equip policymakers, people around the country. Are there ways we can start cutting into the industry, basically? And I love that we're thinking strategically that way. But ultimately, yeah, we agree, because it always victimizes children. So we can't say some of it is okay.
Well, and that's exactly what we talked about at the top of the hour in Exodus 23, is we really do feel like God is behind this mission. And just like the Israelites moving into the promised land, God says that if we obey everything that he says, then he promises, little by little, I will drive them out before you. So we have all kinds of policy recommendations on how little by little we can start to tear the rug out from under big fertility that is victimizing children in so many ways.
Right. Well, that's why it's so important to us that we're changing culture and hearts and laws at the same time, because there really has to be, it has to be a two-pronged attack.
Agree.
All right. Next question. Sounds like it's from a man. Do men have a place in these conversations? It feels like it's mostly about women's issues. So should we stay out of it?
Yeah. And I hate this lie, especially on the abortion front, that this is a women's rights issue and no uterus, no opinion. And the answer is, this is, I would say, even more a man's role to speak into these issues, because it really is men who are tasked with protecting the most vulnerable, even in ways that women are not. Women do have this instinctual mama bear, get away from my kids kind of innate inborn response. But it's men. I mean, if you look at men, they are physically built for defense and offense, I would say. And that actually extends towards their brains as well. It's not just that they have broader shoulders and denser bones and stronger tendons so they can go up against a physical fight. Men have more pathways between the back and the front of the hemispheres of their brains. And so they can be single-minded and totally focused. Like when they want to charge at something, they can be undeterred in ways that sometimes women are not, because we have more connections between the two hemispheres of the brain. And we tend to bounce around between tasks. Both of them have places. Both of them have value. But man, the men who are like a laser beam focused on taking down a lot of the ways that children are being victimized in culture today. Absolutely, when it comes to abortion, certainly when it comes to things like big fertility, but also when it comes to just general marriage and family issues, and protecting children's bodies from transgender treatments, and protecting children from a pornography industry that wants to turn them into lifelong customers and addicts from, you know, the time they're 10 years old. All of those places need strong men. Certainly when you're talking about the world of marriage, family, and reproduction, men also are 50% responsible for any child that is created. So just because you're not gestating the child, you are still involved. You have just as much responsibility, if not more, for protecting the vulnerable children that result, whether that is from sex or from creating children in a laboratory. So don't ever let anybody tell you this is a women's issue. This is a human rights issue. And you men are perfectly positioned, and I would say distinctly designed to lead the charge on child protection.
Yeah, I agree. And we used to call men who make children and abandon them deadbeat dads, right? So we everyone in society loves good men who take care of their children, and we don't like it when men don't take care of their children. And men could control, hey, stop doing sperm donation. Boom, you've basically just crippled the entire industry. And yeah, to your point about abortion, the stats from one of our previous podcasts talked about when the dad of the baby steps up, the abortion rate completely drops off when the dad says, no, now I'm going to take care of you and our child. You know, it makes such a big difference when men step up to lead and take care of their children. So we, of course, want men to be talking about this, telling their friends about it, reading the book together. We need more men involved in this fight. All right, last question. Because of population decline, isn't society having more babies always good, even if they don't go about it in the best way?
Yeah, this is a great question. And we are not the only country that is trying to figure out what to do with the birth dearth. This is probably the biggest problem that nobody is talking about. The fact that about 70% of the countries around the world are not replacing themselves when it comes to their fertility rates. And we have seen all kinds of efforts to stimulate fertility. A lot of them have to do with financial incentives, trying to subsidize women to have more children. Largely, those efforts have not been successful. And so this suggestion that we can use IVF to increase fertility rates because any new baby is a good baby, which I totally agree. Give me all the new babies. But if we're looking at IVF as a tool to increase fertility rates, that probably is not realistic. Lyman Stone wrote about this at the Institute for Family Studies on September 5th. And he talks about how when we already have states that subsidize IVF, and that in those states, overall fertility rates are unaffected. Because while fertility rates rise for older women, it tends to fall for younger women. So this communication that IVF is available actually leads to one of the biggest factors in low fertility, and that is delayed fertility. So the real problem with fertility rates is not necessarily that people are infertile, not necessarily that they don't have the money to have kids. The problem with the falling fertility rates, two of the major problems, is that people are delaying marriage. They're getting married older, and then they are delaying having babies. That is something that is not going to be fixed by IVF. In fact, you can say that it is fueled by IVF. IVF creates this illusion that you can push, especially for women, your childbearing years into your late 30s or your 40s. When the reality is, women's bodies are ready to have babies in their 20s and early 30s. And so we have to get back to the place where we are encouraging people to marry younger and have children sooner, especially women. The other big thing that we need is we need a pro-child, pro-marriage story. That is probably the biggest factor. What we see is the only developed nation in the world that has fertility rates above replacement is Israel. And that is because it's a very pro-child nation. Obviously, you've got high levels of highly religious Jews who really value children, but also the secular residents of Israel have high fertility rates as well. And it is because they tell a different story about marriage and family. They have a very welcoming environment, the restaurants, the parks, the housing situation. It is all very child-affirming and child-welcoming. So we don't need IVF to increase birth rates. In fact, it might work in the reverse for us. What we do need is to change the way we are talking about marriage and family and children. That is what we need to increase fertility rates. Jen, what are your thoughts on this?
It's such a good point to think about culturally how we could encourage marriage and family so much sooner. And like, if you just stopped pushing college for, I mean, in a lot of ways, right? If we stopped pushing college for everyone, it's like everyone just needs to go to high school, 18 years old, you have to go to four-year school, get $100,000 in debt. You know, that's just, I feel like that's sort of been on the decline as well. But if we prioritized, get married, start a family, save the world, and then you prioritize, you know, career can wait, college can wait, and these kinds of things, it would be really interesting to see those cultural shifts. And that seems like a much better solution than relying on the technology, the billion-dollar industry that then has all these negative ramifications where children's lives are being hurt. And that's kind of the shorter answer, right? It's not good to do something that violates the rights of children. Like, all forms of conception aren't equal. We don't advocate for those negative forms.
Yeah. And, you know, this rationale of, you know, any way to create a child is good because children are good. We don't say that about things like rape, you know, like a child results from rape some of the time, and we can exactly. And should still be critical of the circumstances of their conception. Now, obviously, the people that are going into IVF are not doing it because they're trying to harm kids. It's very, very often because they have been misled either by a society that said you can postpone childbearing until you're 38 or 42. They've been misled. A lot of women, unfortunately, have been misled about the things that really matter to them. I mean, women are just bombarded with messages that to have a fulfilling life, you need to be an executive. You need to make partner at the law firm. I mean, you need to put your career first. Marriage can wait. And oftentimes, very, very sadly, women find out that actually making partner doesn't make them happy. And all they want to do is be married, have children, and be home. And at that point, sometimes they have missed the window of having children and maybe bypassed some of the best potential partners that they had for marriage because they were lied to about what matters, especially in the lives of women and the kind of limitations that they have to have their own biological children. So, like you just said, whenever we're talking about tackling these challenges, it has to be a two-front approach. Yeah, we need to change laws, and Them Before Us has some very exciting and some aggressive plans to work to do exactly that in 2025. But we cannot stop telling the truth in culture. We have to change hearts. We have to bring everybody around to this idea that children have rights, that your body is not an obstacle. The way that it works naturally is not an obstacle. It needs to be recognized and embraced. And that is going to lead to healthy children, healthy families, and that's our chance to save the world. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.